Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, I am your host, Tommy Ashley. It is Sunday morning. That means there is a day after podcast to be had. We've got Jason Staples, Buck Sanders with me. Johnny T-Shirt is our sponsor. Johnny T-Shirt was in full effect in Keenan Stadium yesterday. Plenty of gear to go around out there. Beautiful day to watch a football game. Carolina blue sky, blue collar work ethic on display. Buck, 48-21. By the way, I think my final score prediction was 45-28. Pretty close there. Buck, overall impressions on what you saw Saturday in Keenan Stadium?
Well, my overall impression is that I saw things I didn't expect to see, really. I thought that NC State, with Leary out, would concentrate on getting their running game going. Now, maybe Jay Bateman's defense had a lot to do with why they didn't. But if you've got one net rushing yard after one quarter of play, doesn't seem like you've spent a lot of time trying to get your running game going. And they didn't have Leary, as we talked about, but they had Bam Knight and they had Ricky Pearson. He left in the first half, though, I think, with a concussion. They still have Justin Houston. You know, they have some good running backs. And the word was that they were, you know, the offensive line was pretty decent. And they ran the ball for 270, I think, on Wake Forest when they had Hockman at quarterback. So I just taking that game as a blueprint, I thought they would come out and run the ball. And that's not what happened. I was also a little surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, but that they started out the game with their corners 5 and 6 yards off the line of scrimmage. And that just made it for a very easy pitch and catch for Sam Howell. I think he had 100 yards passing in the first quarter. That just didn't seem to make much sense to me. And plus, I think it kind of opened up the perimeter some for the UNC offense. And Michael Carter dances in from 16 yards out by taking around the perimeter. So I saw a lot of things I didn't really understand. Of course, that's pretty typical for me. I don't understand a lot of things, but and I thought I'd see a more physical game from NC State. I thought, as I said, and it wasn't a very chippy game yesterday. Usually they are kind of chippy, but I didn't see a lot of chippiness from either side of the, you know, the ball. So the four turnovers, I didn't expect to see that from NC State. I didn't expect North Carolina to be +4 in turnovers. And I didn't expect the game just to be over by the beginning of the fourth quarter or even a little before that. So all that adds up to what I saw wasn't necessarily what I was expecting to see watching the game from yesterday.
Jason, Buck will say I'm the glass half empty guy, and I am. So I was a little skeptical about whether or not Carolina could do to NC State what they did last season. But I'll say this, and lucky enough to be in the stadium yesterday, like I said, beautiful day. Learned some things, man. Sitting in the shade on the home side is so much nicer than sitting in that broiling sun, Buck. I tell you what, it was 25-degree difference doing that. But to the game itself, It was probably the most relaxing rivalry game watching I've ever done. I mean, I don't, except for when NC State put Finley in and had a couple drives in the first half, that was the only stress. And Jason, it looked like Carolina played the same way. They played very relaxed and just did what they did. Your overall take on just, it was a pretty easy ball game, I felt like.
The more blue collar team won. I mean, it's pretty simple as that. I mean, when you have a team that bullies the other team on the line of scrimmage, that team's going to win the game most of the time. And when that team has the better quarterback, I mean, we've talked about this on this program, I can't tell you how many times, is if one team is better on the line of scrimmage and has the better quarterback, they're going to have over a 90% chance of winning that game. And this game was not between two teams on the same tier in terms of quality at this point. North Carolina is in a different tier of quality and level of play than North Carolina State at this point. And you could see that in the rivalry game. And NC State tried to, you know, poke at Carolina a little bit, tried to get them off their game a little bit on that sort of thing as a way to, you know, use the small stuff, use the soft factors as a way to try to maybe get a little bit of an edge. But good teams just totally ignore that stuff. It just doesn't matter. And Carolina was that much better than NC State, and they just came in with confidence and said, all right, go ahead and stop the running game. Good luck tackling Javonte Williams. All right, go ahead and match up with this offensive line, and we'll see if you can handle that size. Good luck. And that's all they did. And the interesting thing is they really didn't even need to dip into the usual Mack Brown rivalry game bag. This tells you where Carolina is. Normally, you're going to see a bunch of tendency breakers and all that stuff from – we talked about this in the advance to the game from Mack Brown in a rivalry game. You're going to see a bunch of that stuff. You didn't really in this game. They came out and said, we don't need that for you all.
That was impressive to see. Which, they just did what they do.
We're going to do what we do, and if you can stop it, then maybe we'll dip into that. But they reserved all that stuff for a future game. There was no reason to bring it out against NC State. I think it was very clear within the first couple drives, they were like, okay, anything extra we prepared, we're going to keep that in our pocket for when we need it later. And, okay, well, you know, that tells you something about where the two programs are headed. As the talent continues to collect in Chapel Hill.
But Taylor Riplis said it, and a lot of people are saying it. Jason alluded to it there and said it. Is this the changing of the guard in this rivalry? I mean, Mack Brown, what's that, 7 straight for Mack against NC State? I know they're 20 years apart or 20-some years apart, but like Jason said and folks are saying, it just felt different. Right. It felt like there was no, and I said it earlier, there was no fight in NC State that Carolina couldn't handle. Has Mack Brown really turned it that quickly in Chapel Hill, or is this just like last year? Is it just another, you know, just another day on the football field, or is it program shifting amongst the two schools?
Well, you will force me to look ahead down the road and into 2021. And who knows what that's going to look like, because everybody's got an extra year of eligibility. But I'm guessing, and, you know, please don't at me over this, but I'm guessing that Javonte Williams is going to take his talents to a different venue. And so is Michael Carter, Diami Brown, and Daz Newsom. Bo Corrales, you know, I thought about this yesterday. I think Michael Carter and Javonte Williams both may be at worst day two NFL draft picks. You know,
I agree, especially with Javonte. I mean, Michael Carter is going to have a few things in his game that they'll pick apart a little bit for the next level, but he's going to get drafted mid round. I think sort of at the latest.
So, you know, they're going to have to replace a lot of offensive pieces. The good news is Howell's back. The next best news is all the offensive linemen are back, and they will have better depth. And the offensive line played at a high level yesterday. So they've got to, you know, fit some pieces in there at running back. They've got to fit some – well, they've got – I think it's more apparent that they have a wealth of talent, you know, the wide receiver room. So anyway, but the other piece of the equation is they're going to be a lot better on defense than they are this year. You know, that some of those pieces that Mac brought in that are playing now as freshmen, and you know what they're bringing in the 20 class, they're going to have bodies and bodies to use on defense. Jason, you're snickering and you're still distracting me there, buddy. So,
Zoom moments.
Yeah. At least you have your pants on. We can, you know, be thankful for that. But yeah, you know, I do think both, you know, as a team, I'm not necessarily going to say NC State is going in a backwards direction, but I think it's more really about North Carolina's going in at a much higher trajectory. So, you know, I think it's some changing of the guard going on, but I don't think things at NC State have really changed all that much, except they don't have a quarterback. If you think about it, they had good quarterback after good quarterback after good quarterback. They had a run of good quarterbacks. And the last 2 years has sort of been like 2017 and 2018 was for UNC. They just did not have a elite level quarterback directing the offense. So if they can find that piece, I think they could jump back into the mix a little bit. But yeah, I would agree that, yeah, as far as the NC State UNC rivalry goes, the prognosis looks pretty good for the Tar Heels.
I agree there, and we talked about how much quarterbacks make a difference, especially in college football, any football, but college football especially. Jason, I want to talk to you a little bit about the nuts and bolts of this game particularly. We talked about Aleem McNeil a lot last week, and I see on the stat sheet where he made at least one tackle. I don't remember hearing his name in Keenan Stadium yesterday. And I know defensive nose guards, it's not all about stats. But what did Carolina do to effectively make him a non-factor?
So the main thing that they did was just run the football enough that he couldn't be a factor in the passing game. And with the combo blocking and things that they did, those guards and – ultimately, I mean, I thought Anderson played well in terms of position and handling him there. They made him a non-factor by basically just running the football down the line of scrimmage some and having enough guys that, you know, little combo block, little extra arm here, bam. All right, now moving up to the second level. It really boiled down to Carolina's offensive line doing their jobs. And he's a good player, but – I've said this since before last year. I think there's at least four NFL guys that are going to be on NFL rosters on that Carolina offensive line. And when you have that kind of talent on your offensive line, once you really start gelling and developing rhythm up front, you can handle a lot, especially if they've only got one or two players up front, you can handle those guys. And That's where Carolina is on the offensive line. I mean, I think, like I said, I think there's at least four guys currently on the UNC roster that will be playing on Sundays, or at least a backup on Sundays. And you can see that you could see that against NC State yesterday, that they bullied that team, and McNeil wasn't really able to have any impact simply because, first of all, they're not trying to run it straight, you know, into the A gaps, right where he's at. And what they were doing in terms of making sure that you had an extra guy, you know, on a double team or a combo on him, it kind of made it so that he was a non-factor.
Yeah, it was impressive to watch. I mean, looking at the defensive stats for NC State, their defensive line looking down the line, really didn't do much. You're forcing guys to make tackles downfield. But one of the biggest bullies for North Carolina, Javonte Williams, you mentioned him earlier. I mean, Javonte's becoming legendary. He's probably one of the best backs I've ever seen at North Carolina. I'd have to think maybe who could compare. I know there's some out there, and maybe we can look at that in depth at some point this season. But 17 broken tackles or 17 missed tackles. The run in the – I guess was it the fourth quarter when he's coming in our direction towards the Kenan Football Center and he goes left. I mean, State didn't want anything to do with him on that play. I mean, nobody made an effort. But you've watched Carolina football a long time. Where do you put Javonte Williams in that sort of pantheon of North Carolina running backs? Because there have been some good ones.
I would say there's a few guys, obviously, that come to mind. Probably my favorite was Natron Means. Mm-hmm. I think he had a lot to do with the turnaround on offense at UNC the first time around. I think it was maybe the Wake Forest game on the road, 93-92 time frame. And he just went up there and just went off. And when you have a back like that, it just does so much for you. I mean, it's great that North Carolina's offensive line has progressed and improved to the point that it is. They're not hitting the backs in the backfield. That's, I think, a key to me that I'm looking for when I'm watching a game. Is the defensive line or linebackers behind them, the middle backers, interior backers, or are they hitting the backs across the line of scrimmage? Are they getting penetration into the backfield? And you didn't see any of that. And so that's great. But after Javonte got through the hole or once he got around the edge, nobody wanted to bring him down or hardly even tried to bring him down. And on one play, one touchdown play, maybe the second or third one in whichever one it was in the third quarter, when he went around, a couple of State guys tried to tackle him and he just bounced them off of him. And in the process bounced Garrett Walston off of him. He knocked Garrett Walston down too on his way to the end zone. He doesn't see color or anything on the way to the end zone. He's just going to knock you over if you're in his way. And, that is a huge advantage. The number of yards sometimes he gets on first and second down are just unbelievable. I mean, on first down, he'll run for 10 yards. How great a thing is that? And 19 times yesterday, either him or Carter, or maybe some occasions it might have been Sam, ran for a first down. 19 first downs they got running the football. And when you're doing that, you're staying ahead of the chains. If you're making that many first downs, then you're probably, in third and two, third and three, something like that, and they ran for 19 first downs. NC State had a total of 23 first downs, passing and throwing, and four of them came on the penalty. So the North Carolina had just as many third down conversions by running the ball as State did combined in the game, running or throwing it. It's just a huge advantage. Other guys, to follow up on your question, Kelvin Bryant was an amazing rusher. He got hurt, tore his knee all to pieces, but some crazy ECU game, he ran for like six touchdowns, and I mean long touchdown runs. There's some other guys that come to mind. Don McCauley back in the day, obviously. Mike Voigt, the Space Cowboy, and some of those guys come to mind, but Javonte just seems to be a complete back. And the one thing you can't teach a back is want to, and he's got that. I mean, he's not going to go down until he has to go down, but also he seems to be able to go down when pushing it too far. It could you know, resulting in injury. So I think he's got a long career ahead of him at the next level.
Let me, Jason, I want to get your take there, but let me talk about Johnny T-Shirt right fast. Great sponsors of this podcast, great friends of Inside Carolina, friends of Inside Carolina subscribers, 10% off your order if you're a premium subscriber, and that's usually on top of great sales they always have. Carolina gear, sweatshirts, anything you need for warm weather. Of course, they've got plenty, or excuse me, cool weather. They've got plenty of warm weather gear. If you were in Keenan Stadium yesterday, it was quite warm. Johnny T-Shirt's got you set up there, got jerseys. The throwback jerseys out there is pretty popular. And, of course, it's Christmas time, so you need to get your Christmas orders in. I will say this. We ordered from another site, and it took 3 months for it to get here. You order from Johnny T-Shirt, and it takes days for it to arrive at your doorstep if you order from JohnnyT-Shirt.com. And, of course, go visit them if you're in Chapel Hill. Great time to visit Chapel Hill. Beautiful. Leaves are nice. Johnny T-Shirt should be one of your stops on Franklin Street. And, of course, they're alumni-owned and locally operated, so you got to support them because, Lord knows, local businesses, small businesses need all the support we can get. Take another short break. Let the national guys pay the bills. We'll be right back with the game plan. The Day After podcast, man, these things are getting something. Jason Staples, Buck Sanders, I'm Tommy Ashley. We'll be right back.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
We're back with the Day After podcast. North Carolina 48, NC State 21. Jason, on the topic of Javonte Williams, Carolina's backed up. They're on their own half-yard line. Javonte gets a run off right tackle, breaks one tackle at the line of scrimmage, goes 25 yards. And that, you know, that drive was the backbreaker for NC State, I think. The complete, it's over drive. Talk about, I mean, you've broken down a lot of film of him. Clearly, you're not tackling him with one guy. If they can isolate a corner on Javonte, that's not a good matchup for the defense. But what makes him so effective other than his power? Because he's got some speed. But break his game down a little bit across the board, pass catching, blitz pickup, all that.
I mean, as far as pass catching, as far as blitz pickup, everything else, I think the guy's a complete player. And I think you're going to see that when you start seeing NFL discussions about this guy. You're going to see people talking about, like, look, and this is one of the sad things about last week, he's dropped one ball in 2 years.
And it was that one.
And it was that one. And it was not a pressure drop. It was not because, I mean, it was a tough catch. It, you know, I think it might have even been tipped a little bit, but you know, you start noticing that stuff and you're going, okay, well, where are the holes? And yeah, there are times where, you know, and I've highlighted a couple of them where he's had he could be a little bit better in pass protection, but by and large, he is really reliable in pass protection. And at 220 pounds, he uses all of it when he's in pass protection. And yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right that sequence, it wasn't so much that was the turning point or anything. I think that was the moment where he broke NC State's will. It was one of those things where you could see those guys. It was like, I don't see it happening for us guys. You right. And you could see guys late, especially later in that game, they were making business decisions when it came time to tackle. And when you're a running back and you've got guys starting to make business decisions saying, you know, I think I'll go low. I think I'll just kind of dive in here a little bit and see what happens. Well, then you're going to get more broken tackles. And it also means that game's over. And I think you could see that with State. They made business decisions when Javonte was running the football later in that game. And that's why his missed tackle count was so high. I mean, it's high in every game, but it was unusually high even for him in this game, because Carolina broke – it wasn't just him, but Carolina broke the will of NC State early, I think, in the second half. And then from that point on, it was, you know, let's go ahead and take care of business. And actually, again, I think it might have been earlier than that. I mean, you can go to that run in particular. You go, yeah, those guys are starting to think a little bit.
Yeah, that run I referenced, and we're talking about 7:04 of the third quarter. It says up the middle, a little bit off tackle, 24 yards on first down.
Yeah, that's about the stage where I think they started looking at each other like, we ain't winning this, guys.
Yep, they're done. Buck, let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. And you talked about it in your opening, and it was something that was a concern after seeing Carolina give up some running yards the last 2 weeks. The issue was the running quarterback. State did not have a running quarterback. And I don't want to knock a kid, but Bailey Hockman, he struggled mightily. I mean, that's as light as I can put it. I thought Finley came in and did some things for NC State, but once Carolina figured out that the swing passes were all he was going to throw, that switched. But when you look at NC State and you've got Bam Knight with 9 carries for 41 yards and Ricky Person, which I thought he broke his arm on that play. I didn't realize he'd had a concussion, at least in person. Those guys combine for 53 yards between them. Yes, the game's over if that happens. But what did you see from Carolina? I thought Chaz Surratt woke up, played a great game. Carolina's defense was just excellent against the NC State offense that had some success, and especially it had success running the ball. I thought they'd go all Baylor on Carolina and just run it left and right. Jay Bateman wasn't having it, but
that's what I expected too. And one of the things I will say, though, because we don't talk about him probably as much as we should, but Jeremiah Gimmel is a very smart football player. He had several occasions watching the game, particularly, you know, the recorded version, you could see him making good decision after good decision, coming down the line and knowing which way the ball was going to go, which way the ball carrier was going to go, and just gave them nothing. So I think Gimmel's intelligence plays a big role in that defense, more so than probably we give it credit. The other piece, I think, and, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we went on air, but if you look at the stats from last year, the snap counts, you know, I can remember some snap counts last year where you had Strobridge and Crawford getting 65, 70 snaps a game. And, you know, no real relief. And this year, obviously, they don't have either one of them, and they're doing a lot more substitution because the difference is not as great. But the other thing, North Carolina's running game is keeping defenses, keeping their defense off the field. You know, there was like, I want to say, 4 touchdown drives, 10 plays or more yesterday. That's a lot of time to rest for a defense. And the defense is obviously helping themselves. They got three and outs to start the game. And so you start looking at a time of possession. If every starter played every minute of the last 2 games on defense, they would have only played 23 minutes. And they held the ball for 34, 35 minutes against Florida State and held it 36 or so minutes yesterday. I mean, the offense is keeping the ball for a long time. North Carolina's running 80 plays plus the last two games. And the other side, the other offenses are running like 60. So that makes a huge difference in that the defense, there's some younger guys on there, guys that are learning, but they don't have to be on the field for an extended period of time. They're not playing tired. You know, they're not winded. You know, I think strength and conditioning program is very good at UNC anyway. But there's a big difference between Tamori Fox playing 30 snaps, or what I think that was correct, that he played about 30 snaps yesterday, and Crawford and Strobridge playing 65 last year. You know, he can go 100% every snap, and I think that makes a big difference. Schematically, I think Bateman just said, we don't believe you can throw the ball, so we're just going to stack the box, put extra people in the box, and dare you to throw it. And if you can, congratulations. But we're going to put a lot of bodies in there within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and if you can get through there, congratulations again. And I just think that's how Bateman played it. In layman's terms, Jason would probably have a greater explanation than I would, but that's how I saw it through layman's eyes.
Jason, what's your take? Of course, Chaz Surratt had a good game yesterday, and I want to ask this question as related to Surratt, but and then you can expound on Buck's point there. Chaz looks like he has a lot more success when facing a guy that's not a jitterbug type player. And I mean, that's true for everybody. But if Chaz can get straight line on somebody like he was able to do a couple of times, especially on Finley, the quarterback, he's all over it. And NC State didn't present the jitterbug type athlete that maybe a Florida State has or whatever. Talk about that aspect of Surratt's game, especially against NC State. But also, did Bateman do anything differently other than Buck said? Just dare him to beat him throwing the ball, and NC State couldn't do it.
Yeah, I think it was really what Buck said is they loaded the box, and in the system that NC State's running, they're going to do a lot of RPO type stuff where you have a play call that's either a run or a short pass or some sort of pass concept that can be executed while they're run blocking. And if you load the box against those teams, you can usually dictate for them to throw. You can basically say, okay, look, we've got an extra guy in the box. We're single covering you out here. So by your rules, you got to throw this ball. And if your guys are better covering than their guys who are running the routes, or if they don't have a quarterback who can make that play, then that's that. They're going to throw it and they're going to fail. So there was some of that. Is basically they just said, you're going to have to run into this box where, and I'm looking at a play right now. Actually, I was just watching videos on YouTube of Rams against Wolves. You really, really bet on the Ram there, just as a rule. Wolves really do not want a piece of a like full-grown Ram, just saying. Anyway, so I switched it over a little bit, and I'm watching another video now on the other side of this. But I've got a freeze frame right now, and you know I'm looking for some plays that I specifically want to break down schematically. And you can see before the snap that NC State has a formation they can run or throw from. It's they've got three receivers, an H-back in the backfield, in the kind of pistol type formation. And so you got five blockers, you got an H-back, and you got a back. That's if you're gonna run the football, that's gonna be six blockers plus the running back. Carolina has gone, they're in press across the board, which is that is one thing that Bateman did in this game that he doesn't do in every game, is they press across the field. And that tells you that Bateman felt like, look, you guys can't beat my guys. you don't have receivers that can run by my guys. So I'm gonna go ahead and press you. And I'll give you, and it's what we said in the pregame in the game plan podcast, is against this team with that quarterback, you say, look, if you can beat us multiple times on big plays with your receivers, we're just going to tip the cap to you, but we're going to press you. We're going to force you to make those plays because we don't think you can do them. That's exactly what he did. And now I'm looking at the front, and you got your four defensive linemen, your two backers, and then you got a safety 5 yards off in the box. So now you got seven against their six plus one for the running game. The only way you're going to run against that is if you're going to run the quarterback. And, well, you know, got news for you about Hockman and Finley as runners. They're not, say, Jordan Travis, who Florida State faced last week, right? That against Jordan Travis, that's a run look because you've got seven in the box and the extra guy for the quarterback is at free safety, 15 yards off the ball, 12 yards off the ball. Against a quarterback that can't really run, the numbers are in the defense's favor. And Bateman and the defense took advantage of that all day. They basically said, you're going to have to run your quarterback, which we don't think he can run that well, or he's going to have to beat us with his arm, and we don't think your receivers or your quarterback are good enough to do that. So simple as that.
And, you know, to follow up on Jason's point, it's not like NC State didn't throw the ball. They threw it 44 times. They passed for 358 yards. But Bateman's bet was you're not going to put yourself in a scoring position like that. You're going to be behind the chains. It's going to be third and 10. And maybe you've gone 30 or 40 yards on this drive, but you're going to have to throw it on third and 10 again. And if I beat you on that, you're off the field. So they gained a ton of yards, 358, and threw it 44 times. They just couldn't make any points. You can't make a living like that if you're, you know, constantly facing third and 10 or long, and you have to make that play, because then the defense can get in a different posture. They can play you a little differently if they know you got to go 10 yards for a first down. So,
and that's actually a really good point in terms of the difference playing defense today in this era versus playing defense, say, even 10 years ago. I mean, in the Butch Davis era, for example. In today's era, with the way that rules favor the offense to such a degree, and the enforcement of those rules specifically favor the offense so much, and the way that teams are using RPOs and things to give defenses so much trouble. I mean, you think about it. If you're a defensive coordinator or a linebackers coach, you coach your linebackers on specific keys. Okay, you watch the guard. If he's run blocking and he's coming at your level, you've got to get downhill to get into this gap. That's your job. Well, now most offenses in college football, half their passing game is that guard is releasing and coming straight downhill into that gap, and the linebacker has to trigger because that's his responsibility. And as soon as he triggers, they're going to throw right behind him. Well, there's zero way to stop that. This is why that's illegal in the NFL, right? In the NFL, you are either pass blocking or run blocking. With, you know, they'll do some RPO stuff, but you can only be a yard downfield in the NFL, and they enforce it. In college, it's 3 yards, and they really give you five or six sometimes. I mean, Florida State, one of their biggest plays against North Carolina, they had a lineman that was, I think, 5.5 yards downfield. And that stuff just does not get called very often in college football. Well, if that's the case, you can't stop teams. You're not going to – teams are going to get yardage against you. And, you know, you look at what happened with Ole Miss against Alabama's offense this year. Ole Miss, I mean, that was a Nick Saban defense with as much talent as anybody has in the country.
You heard what Nick had to say this past week about offense and defense too, I'm sure, Jason.
I actually didn't. I missed it.
You know, this is a very interesting thing to come out of Nick Saban's mouth. But he just said this point blank in words that we've all used. He said that once upon a time, good defense could beat good offense.
Yeah, that's not happening now.
He says that's no longer true. He said you just cannot beat a really good offense with good defense. Now, it helps to have a good defense, but and he was really saying that in reference to the Georgia game, where he said they have a great defense. Their defense is amazing. Their defense is as good as ours or better.
Yeah, I think that Georgia team's the best defense in the country.
And
it doesn't matter.
He said, no, it doesn't matter, because you cannot beat a great offense with a great defense anymore. It's just not happening for you. And for hear Nick Saban say that, you know, a lot of jaws ought to be hitting the floor, but he's just speaking the truth. I mean, anyway, get back to your point.
And that,
Jason,
gets beyond, like, the number of holding calls that are the amount of holding that happens on every play in the line of scrimmage, the amount of holding that they're allowing offensive lines to get away with is it's jaw dropping. I mean, they are not enforcing holding unless it is absolutely blatantly obvious and directly within a you know, very short order, very short space leads to something that is measurable with, you know, within the confines of that play. Otherwise they're letting stuff go to the point where unless you have an absolutely spectacular defensive line, teams are just going to hold the heck out of you. And only the best defensive linemen are going to get away with, or are going to get through some of those holds. And before, you know, some of the partisans here are going to say, well, yeah, that's true. You know, I see, you know, all these holding calls that are not called against North Carolina's opponents. It, trust me, there's a bunch of stuff that's not called on the North Carolina side all the time too. Just teams, they're not calling holding very much. Well, once you've got that, you're once you know that they're going to be allowed to be downfield run blocking while throwing while throwing, and they can hold your guys with impunity or near impunity, as a defensive coordinator, your mindset kind of has to change, because you know you're not going to limit a good offense, even a mediocre offense, to 20, 21 points. You're just not going to. So what do you have to do? You have to start approaching this as, all right, look, we're going to give up 400 yards. It's okay. I'm okay with giving up 400 yards. But what we can't do is give up touchdowns. I'm okay giving up a 30-yard, you know, 30-yard drive, 40-yard drive here, and I'm going to roll the dice to get a tackle for loss, to get a sack, to get something that gets them off schedule so that, yeah, they got 35, 40 yards, but now I just happen to get three plays in a row because I won on first down. Now I'm going to get something on second down, and now I get my guys off the field. That's all that matters. It's not a matter of trying to choke out a team or suffocate a team. I mean, you go back to the Butch Davis days, the last couple of years, and that 2009 defense, that 2010 defense, those defenses could choke teams out. And you could try to win, you know, 24-17. That's just not today's football. If you're Jay Bateman, you're saying, look, I can stop. I can try to stop this team in every sense, and I'm just going to give up a ton of plays. Or I can roll the dice in just the right way so that eventually my number is going to come up. So I have to avoid giving up the long play for a touchdown, but I can give them this play. I can be willing to give them these things enough in the hopes that as I roll, eventually snake eyes is going to come up. Eventually I'm going to get my doubles. Eventually I'm going to get whatever, you know, red's going to hit. And now I've got my tackle for loss. They're off schedule. Now I got my chance. Or I'm going to roll this, and I'm hoping that, you know, I've got about a 15% chance of getting a turnover if I call this against this look, because here's what they're likely to do. I'm going to roll those dice, and I might give up a 15-yard play, but if there's a 15% chance that I get a turnover on this that they throw into my guy, that's how defenses and good defensive coordinators are approaching things a lot these days, is they're willing to some degree give up some yardage. You of course hate that as a coordinator, and you coach your guys to make tackles and get teams off the field and do all that. But really what matters is, can you get the stops, get the key stops to say, can we make this play? Can I make sure that I get a guy that steps in enough to get them off schedule, to get a turnover, to get a hand on a ball, to, you know, change the math a little bit so that now we've got a chance to get off the field. And that's what that's about. And I think that's what we've seen for the most part this year from Bateman's defense is, yeah, they've given up yards, but look how many stops they've gotten. And look at how well they've done in avoiding giving up touchdown drives. And you see a tackle for loss here. You see interceptions. You see different things like that that change that. And that's really what we saw from Bateman and the defense against NC State. We're willing to give you some of those passing yards. And you know what? They gave up a couple big plays, a couple touchdowns in the passing game. But in the process, I'm willing to give you that as long as you don't get that. And that meaning you're going to have consistent yardage enough to be able to just matriculate the ball down the field and score that way. No, you're going to have to take that away from us. And we don't believe you can do that consistently enough to keep from being behind the chains otherwise. That's what they did.
Yeah, that last 5 minutes, 10 minutes needs to be on loop for some folks, especially the folks that were at me during the game about Jay Bateman and his poor schemes and his poor team's execution. And, you know, I don't I think we can wrap the podcast on that, because that nails the concept of defenses in 2020 with the way offenses. And Buck, you brought up Saban. If Saban's saying it, whether you agree with him or not, or believe or like him or not, it's the truth.
I think the last several games, I'd have to go back and check this to be sure, but I think Alabama's defense has gave up over 400 yards the last several games.
Yep.
And, yeah. You know, for Saban, you know, that's got to be like chewing on bone or something. You know, he's not used to giving up that kind of yards, but he just basically said, doesn't matter anymore. You know, it's, if I've got a great offense, I'm feeling pretty good about things. And Alabama has a great offense, by the way. Although they lost Waddle yesterday, I think.
Yeah, they did.
Returning a kick.
Which, it was a bad injury.
Yeah, and so that's why I don't mind the fair catches or letting the balls go through the end zones on the kickoff returns, because that's a – yeah, that was bad for Waddle, and Saban knew it right when it happened. So, anyway, Carolina routes NC State, second straight year. What is that now? That's 89-31 over the last 2 years.
Wait, what was that number again?
89-31.
Is that a 58-point gap?
In 2 years, yeah. And if you want to knock out last year's first half, it's like worse. I mean, I think the worm has – it's amazing what blue-collar football can do to teams. Buck Sanders, Jason Staples, I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You've been listening to the Day After Podcast. We'll break all that down and plenty more later in the week. We will have some football with On the Beat with Ross Martin and Greg Barnes later in the week, basketball included in that podcast. So if you don't like double up shows, you're getting one when On the Beat got Coast to Coast coming. And then before you know it, Jason, Greg, and I will be doing another game plan podcast. Carolina goes to Virginia on Halloween night. Whew, that's been an interesting place for Carolina, especially around the Halloween witching hour. So we'll see how that one goes. Buck, Jason, appreciate you joining me.
Thanks, Tommy. Enjoyed it, Jason.
A heck of a lot more fun on evaluations like today's.
Yeah. Yep. And 48-21 is pretty easy to analyze, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, Jason, look forward to any film breakdown you got this week. They're always a blast. Buck, always love the column. Johnny T-shirt, always appreciate the sponsorship. We'll see y'all again soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.